Good evening, everyone. I'd like to welcome you to the June 26th regular Othello City Council meeting. Calling this meeting to order at 6:30 p.m. Would you all please rise for a short private invocation, asking for God's blessing upon this city and the decisions we make tonight. And now, if you'll please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Please be seated. Our roll call tonight, we have two members absent. Eugene Vain is visiting family in South Carolina, and Larry McCourty has had something come up, obviously, so I'd entertain a motion to excuse those two council members from tonight's meeting.
I'll make that motion.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. We move to item 1.5, citizen input. Is there any citizens here tonight who would like to address the Othello City Council? Okay, hearing none. We'll move to the approval of the agenda. I do want to point out on the consent agenda is item 3.5 and 3.6, resolution to release retainage to William M. Finger Construction and acceptance of the skateboard brick project. If you guys want to discuss that further, we can move those to the current business. Otherwise, if you guys are fine, we'll just approve it on the consent agenda. So if anybody wants to move that for discussion, I need a motion. Hearing none, I'd entertain a motion to approve our agenda tonight.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Item 3 is consent agenda. Entertain a motion to approve our consent agenda.
Make that motion.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Now we'll move to our current business 4.1, interfund loan policy. Spencer, you have a report.
Yeah, for a few council meetings ago, we were talking about an interfund loan to pay for part of a 14th Avenue project, one of the recent change orders. It was going to be about $300,000, and we're expecting to get $300,000 in, but we're not sure if we're going to be getting it this year or next. And so in lieu of that cash flow issue, we wanted to have an interfund loan between the where the street fund would borrow about $300,000 from the sewer fund, and it would be for a time period that we can come up with later, a year to 3 years in there somewhere. Anyway, tonight, to lay the groundwork to be able to do that, I wanted to put together a interfund loan policy that walks us through these are the cases that we can where we can have an interfund loan established, and this is how we're going to do it. And so this is a very basic policy. It follows the state auditor's office BARS manual, the budget accounting and reporting system manual that they prescribed. I just go down all the pieces. The first section right here talks about the situations where we can use this kind of policy, and the very first bullet point there is to offset timing differences in cash flow. That would be the exact situation that we're facing here. And then there's some other items there.
But if you scroll down, the procedure walks through, I think, 1 through 6 here, very basic. It says the legislative body will set up this loan by ordinance. It's going to be similar to a contract. It'll have a specific time period, specific dollar amount, a repayment period, an interest rate. When we set up an interfund loan where the street fund is borrowing money from the sewer fund, we have to treat those like two completely separate entities. And so we'll have a contract in place between those two, just like we would if we were borrowing money from a bank.
And that is basically what this policy says. If you have any questions, I can field some of those now. If you don't have any questions, it would be my recommendation that the council make a motion to approve this policy.
Thank you, Spencer. Council, do you have any questions? Very good. Well done. That's exactly what we needed. I'd entertain a motion to approve the new 2017 and beyond interfund loan policy.
Second.
Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
Thank you.
Thank you, Spencer. And then we move to First Avenue Reconstruction, Phase 2, Item 4.2. Kurt, you have a report for us?
We sat with the Public Works Committee last week and reviewed the costs and some of the changing guard in the TIB leadership. A lot of discussion regarding putting your streets on a diet, sharper radius, bulb outs, even discussions about road cross sections and materials. And the reason why we brought that up is we're currently going out to bid for the First Avenue project, and there were scope items outside what they would pay for in that in the project design. We've broken out the project into four schedules. Schedule A is the TIB funded portion of the storm street and sidewalk. Schedule B is the TIB funded water related elements. So for example, if we have to go in there and replace a ADA ramp and there's a pole that doesn't allow the wheelchair to get around to the ADA ramp, that pole has to be relocated. Avista is doing that, but in this case, it'd be the fire hydrants. There's a sample station down on Columbia. So those elements that are related to ADA that have to be relocated, TIB will pay for. And then there's those items, Schedule C, that TIB will not pay for. And that included increased radiuses for the ADA ramps to allow the trucks to make the corners without driving over the sidewalk. And also the road cross section. If you recall, in the first phase of First Avenue, the city went to a presentation on a fiber mesh that they put into the asphalt to give it increased strength. And we tried it out on phase one. It appears like it's performing very well. It's only a year and a half, almost, I guess, pushing 2 years into the life cycle of that. So we did include costs into the application to pay for that. TIB, with this new leadership, has pulled support of sandwiched geotextiles and asphalt or fiber mesh. We talked it over with staff and the Public Works Committee, and they would still like to go forward with this product. So that would be, I kind of became more aware of the reserves and stuff talking with Spencer with the Columbia Avenue stuff, and got a little bit more sensitive about transportation and street budget items. And this would be, we're guessing, about $60,000 adder out of the street fund. And then the remaining Schedule D is just the water related items that TIB will not reimburse. So if we had to widen a change in intersection for a truck outside those few that they would pay for and relocate a fire hydrant, we also stubbed to a lot that didn't have a water stub. We wanted to make sure that that had water. We didn't have to cut into the new street someday. So there were some minor water elements. But I wanted council to be aware of that. There's no legislative action that you need to take. We don't have the bids yet, but we'll come back with the bid results. And, barring any irregularities, we'll be at the next council meeting with a recommendation for award. Any questions regarding that?
Do you want anybody from the committee to respond?
I do.
Okay. So in the committee meeting, those three items are not covered under the DMV. We're not going to get paid for it. They total $148,000. $60,000 of that $148,000 is going to be for the mesh on First Avenue to hold it together, which we should do. It's something that we should do because we don't want to fall apart within 3 years of putting it on. And with that heavy truck traffic and the flow, it's something we should do. So we really didn't get around in committee to talking because Spencer wasn't there, but we didn't get around to talking about funding options available for covering these items. Not necessarily because I know we cut the street fund.
Flash flood warnings.
Knowing that you come with the street fund for the street fund raising the taxes and stuff like that, and we use that money to do the street repairs that we already said, we have to be creating funding options to cover this amount, but it is something that you need to do. It's not going to be covered by grant. So with that in mind, I put together, I just keep adding some of these projects to our worksheet that we're seeing over and over again. And I put a couple of options up there that we can talk through when you're ready. If you want to right now, this is all part of the same conversation. We were going back and forth on where's the right place to put this.
Okay, is that on the multiple loader or do we have it?
You have it. It's on
only options?
Yeah, which are the only options.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. So these top items here are items that we've already discussed that are funded items. And this on your copy, this is white down here. And so these are available funds in there for general funds, street reserve. We have no fund balance and zero maintaining fund balance. TBD, which you were just talking about, we have $234,000 that we budgeted to use this year, not for any specific project yet. But so we have $234,000, and then we used to have an ending estimated fund balance here of about $33,000. It turns out we're going to get about $85,000 more than that. So we have more money there than originally estimated, and then we want to see. So for the First Avenue Part 2, I put combining Parts 2 and 3 here because originally we had Parts 2 and Part 3. They were two separate grants, two separate contracts with TIP. And those two and three are being combined into one, so that's just one Part 2. If you ever hear somebody talking about a Part 3, it's Part 2 and Part 3 are really just Part 2 now. But with those items that we were just talking about on the schedules C and E, of Schedule C would have $60,000 that we would need to pay for out of street or TBD money. And so to pay for it out of street, we wouldn't be able to use any fund balance because we don't have any. So we could take it out of the human reserves. Or if we use TBD money, we could put it there. And before, I just want you to make that decision with your eyes wide open. So we have, instead of about, 234 plus 33, we have 234 plus 117, which is about $350,000 altogether here. If we put that $60,000 in TBD, we would still have $300,000 to work with. I just got some numbers from Terry talking about some street overlays on 2nd Street from Elm to Stevie, and then on Pine from 4th and Broadway. These are two of the streets that Wade and I drove around. We took a bunch of pictures and there's all kinds of problems. For us to overlay those two would be about $204,000. So let's say if we take $204,000 off the table out of the TBD to pay for those two, That leaves about $30,117, about $150,000 left in TBD money, and we can use about 60 of that for service. So we can still use 60,000 for this chamber that where these schedules C and D are coming up tonight, and still have money for other overlays. But then down below, I have some other things coming on the pipe in the future for your consideration. But when you're talking about where is the $60,000 going to come from, I just wanted you to be able to make that decision with this other piece in mind. And
okay. Great. Helps. Thanks.
Cool. Yep.
I got a question for, I don't know if it'd be Kurt or Terry, that $204,000 for the overlays, is Pine Street able to be overlaid? It's
in. Yeah, they're going to completely pulverize that whole base on the bottom of it and take out the trunk line road and then play overlay against
the top. Okay.
And then, I think that 204 is a preliminary number. Is that kind of an estimate?
Yeah, that's about 104,000 on that street. That came straight from Granite.
So is that one of those deals where they'll pulverize it, mix it in?
No, it's just, no? We're just going to that whole surface right there and then regrade that, take it down, pull it out, and then overlay that.
Because does it have a base?
It's got some to it. They're going to use the rest of it for it.
What do you mean the rest of it for it?
The top.
Was that they're going to crush? I thought you couldn't do that.
Yeah, the one line is the asphalt. You do an aggregate, and then you just use 60.
They basically make it look just like a gravel.
Yeah. But I thought you couldn't do that.
Yeah.
Well, I like the idea that we're starting to do, you know, putting these projects in for the future, especially Broadway, Pine, into all the way up to 4th, because that's what we had that money there for, the TBD.
Mm-hmm.
And because I've been asked already 2-3 times.
I know.
So it's good that we're moving forward.
Get those residential streets done.
Yeah.
Every time I run into the same lady, she says, I'll believe it when I see it.
So
we're going to make believers out of her.
There you go.
So, okay, that's good. So, this is just, we'll just do a budget amendment, will we not?
Yeah, so we don't need a hard decision tonight.
Yeah.
So when we get to the point that...
When the bids come in and we find out what the real amount is, then we'll readdress it and vote on it.
Okay.
Hopefully, the bids will come in lower than what the estimates were. You always want that, right?
Yeah. That would be nice.
Okay, so we'll move to item 4.3, approval of city's public records policy. Becky?
Hello. Good evening, Council Mayor. As some of you know, last May, House Bill 1594 was also passed along with 1595. It is relating to improving the public records policy, which since I found out and me and Debbie found out it was going to be passed, have been working to reamp our public records policy with all the new things that they've changed. Some of the major points that they did change was amending the definition of the public records definition, requiring training for public records for retention, production, and disclosure of electronic records. With the way technology is going, electronic records are being asked for, and there's so many different ways and so many different things that electronic records can be used for that they've changed that to where we now have many different things to look at now. I was actually at training and I was surprised at some of the things that can hold electronic public records that I never thought of. Created a grant program within the Office of Secretary of State for Local Government to improve the public records management system. Established a program within the Office of the Attorney General and State Archives, provided a dollar document recording fee for the county auditors, which we just received information from them that they will be upping their fees for $5 beginning July 23rd. Updates the process of asking record requesters to clarify the request that they have. Requires agencies to maintain a log, which we already do. However, now it's mandatory. It never used to be mandatory. Now it is. So, and requires agencies with actual budget public records cost over $100,000 to report to the Joint Legislative Audit and Review Committees, which is something the City of Othello does not have to do. However, like I mentioned, some of these we already do, but we just revamped our records policy to make sure that all these new changes are on our policy. So some of the ones that we are amending in the policy, which in the policy that you have on board docs is underlined, is we already provide public records online, but now when we do get a public records request, we can just direct them to our city website, as letting them know that they can just go there and get the information that they need instead of having to do a public records request. If the requester fails to respond to the clarification of a request that we have, we can deny the part we don't understand, but we are still obligated to respond to the part that we do understand on the public records request. Exemptions, a new thing that exemptions of records held by volunteers. Now, if we have volunteers in the city and they are not appointed by the mayor or they're not a city employee, whatever records they have are considered exempt. They are not public records. We can deny bot records, which means if we get various requests over the same person, just the same one over and over and over and over again from different people, then that's considered like a bot request from the explanation that they gave to us, and those we can deny. And we updated our exemption provisions. So it's like we sent this to Kelly already, and we didn't hear back, so we assume everything is good. So my recommendation for the council is to approve the updated records policy.
Council, do you have any questions? Entertain a motion to approve this updated public records policy.
I'll make that request.
Second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you, Becky. So we'll now move to section 4.4, selection of community development director. Wade?
Mayor and Council, as you're well aware, we've been looking for a community development director for couple months, and we finally narrowed it down to three candidates here a few weeks ago, and then had an interview panel just of myself and the mayor, John, and Terry, and we interviewed, say, three candidates. Two were very strong, and it was a toss-up between the person we chose, Ann Henning, and the number two person, who we'll talk about in a minute as well. But we chose Ann for a couple of reasons. One, she has a good, strong resume background in planning. She's a senior planner for, as you can see, for Moses Lake. Been there for about 17 years or so. When I called to talk to her boss and her boss's boss, they both gave her very high marks. Didn't want to lose her. In fact, I saw one at the conference last week. I saw her boss's boss, and he was not happy. But I think we'll do good with Ann. She doesn't have the broad breadth of experience that Travis brought to us, but Travis had a certain skill set that we needed, i.e. how to develop a comp plan, which he did very well. And now Ann, we talked to her about follow-up on that. She's well aware of work for comp plans, worked the shoreline plan for Moses, which is very controversial. And so she has a lot of good creds as far as dealing with both developers and with citizens. And we believe she's going to fit in very well for Othello. So we need council's, I guess, approval. The mayor said yes, but we need council approval for her. But before I do that, let me just talk about, if you want me to be mayor first, or you want to do this approval first and go talk about Teddy.
Do one at a time.
Yeah, let's. Yeah, the mayor, while the mayor can appoint someone to a department head position, he still needs, it's subject to city council approval. So I would like to appoint Ann Hennings as our new community development director. Do you have a timeline?
I do, as a matter of fact. Her first day will be next week on the 7th of July. Oh. She'll come in and do paperwork, get that done. She's going on vacation right away. She's got a planned vacation with her daughter that, you know, paid money for and everything else. So she'll come back the first day then in the office will be on the 13th for real. And we'll get her squared away and get her going. But she'll get a lot of her paperwork done and processing stuff down on the 7th. And then in the saddle for good on the 13th.
So I need a motion.
I'll make that motion.
I'll second it.
All those in favor of Ann Henning becoming the City of Othello's new Community Development Director, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
So our number two person, Teddy Hardcastle, as we turned out, as I talked to her, she has a broad background, very extensive background in grant writing and grant administering. So just to let the council know, the mayor and I are in conversation with her. We're on board as a grant writer, still in negotiation as far as how much and the terms and how she's going to work that. But just to let you all know that we lucked out, we think, in our process here, and perhaps got a grant. We looked for a good grant writer for a long time, and we believe we have one. She's got a long track record of doing that. So anything to add, Mayor?
She has done some very high-level projects. She's really connected with federal grants. In addition to statewide grants, she's done work for the Quinault Indian Nation, a lot of work in South Dakota. She's done some major projects in the Tacoma area. She's got a lot of experience. What she says is that she wants to go somewhere where she can make a difference over the next 8 years. She brings money into the community. She has a opportunity to make a huge difference in our community. We're trying to get her out here so that you guys can meet her, give her an idea of looking around the area, some of the things that we're talking about trying to accomplish. And I think that we're just looking for a good fit. At the same time, we went to Association Washington Cities Conference, ran into a firm. They do three phases of this type of work. So let's say you have a project you want to do. They will do the project development. They will do the grant writing to help you fund the project. And then they will also do the lobbying for your city, either to get an earmark, a direct appropriation. They also do policy change and things like that. That's kind of, we're not really at that level yet, but we're more in the level of those types of services, and we've never hired a lobbyist. But that was the information I think some of you received, or I think all of you have received about them. We'd like to bring them out next month for a visit to find out just exactly how this all might be able to come together. So that's what we have on our horizon. And Teddy, if we can come to agreement with her, would play a big part in that. And so I think that's all I have, Dan.
So any questions on that? We'll keep you guys updated as that develops. Last thing I wanted to update you all on is our engineer search. I think we finally got about two or three good candidates to interview. One especially good, I hope will bear fruit. So I'm going to press forward with setting those up sometime in the next couple of weeks, probably the middle of July, get the engineer interview, perhaps brought on board. So that's where we are with that.
Good.
Good. Questions?
Thank you, Wade.
Okay.
Move to item 4.5, Relay for Life Resolution and Facility Use Agreement. Amy? All the questions have been answered now.
I hope so. So I was here last time talking to you about Relay for Life in a very preliminary way, since I didn't have a lot of information that I was looking for. Since then, I have sat down with the director of the event and discussed a little bit more about the actual event logistics, which I think were a big concern for me particularly and for some of you. So some of the things that we discussed were the walking path itself. If you can picture in your mind the area where 4th of July normally is in the southern part of the grass, They will set vendors up, or vendors, Relay for Life teams up, like the vendors, in a rectangular pattern, and use the inside of that vendor area as their walking track, so they can use the electricity from the vendor cord going from east to west on the northern side of that grass, and then the tree line extension cords for power there. And then each booth will have light in it, which will illuminate the walk path for all of the participants all night long. So it's a requirement for each one of their overnight stays to have some sort of light inside of their booth space to try to keep that inside area illuminated. There won't be a hazard of trips over cords or anything, because all of those will be going towards the outside of the walking area. They will also be using the tennis courts for another, auxiliary walk path for people who might have a difficult time navigating a walk path in the grass. So that will be lit and available for teams that want to use that. For instance, like the Weezers and Geezers, they will be using that for their walk path instead of in the grass. There's also going to be several different sporting events on just about every facility that Lions Park has to offer. So they're going to have kickball on field one at the baseball fields. They're going to show a movie at shelter one in the middle of the night as one of their activities. They're going to be doing Zumba inside the hockey rink. They'll have a 3-on-3 basketball tournament on the basketball courts. The kickball and the basketball tournaments are fundraisers for specific teams using those facilities during the event to raise more money. So there is no intention of having any sort of road construction lights, like spotlights like we talked about before. I believe that with the ball field lights and the tennis court lights and the hockey rink lights, and then the vendor or the overnight camper lights around the perimeter of the walk path, that it should be adequately lit for the event. The stage will also be part of that perimeter walking area, and there will be lights on the stage as well. So it should hit it from all four sides. In their facility use agreement is where I lined out some of the specific things that we talked about, like stakes not being driven into the ground more than 6 inches. There's a couple of large teams that come in and put big tents for overnight stay, and I know they use stakes longer than 6 inches, so I've made a point to note that in the resolution. And also verbally confirmed that with Diana, that those people will have to either use barrels or sandbags or something above ground in addition to the 6-inch stake. And the fire pits, the contained fire pits that campers are accustomed to having during the event, must be raised 6 inches off the ground. And Relay for Life staff will have to contain all of the embers and ashes the following morning and dispose of those on their own, so we don't end up with people just dumping, possibly burning embers into the grass at the park. Those are some of the, and then of course I also outlined the overnight staying period in Lions Park being permitted in the resolution. I used a typical facility use agreement that we use with every other special event in the park. I did some research with what the school district has done in the past with Relay for Life as far as the expectations to some of the concerns that I think you shared, as far as damage to property and exactly who's liable if something were to happen. And the school district uses a standard facility use agreement and found that their hold harmless agreements and all of those pieces that are built into a standard facility use agreement are satisfactory enough. So I went ahead and used what I typically use, which has been given to me by Kelly, and I was sure to line out some of the more specific things, overnight staying, fire pits, stakes in the ground, in the resolution, instead of messing with the facility use agreement too much. I'm kind of on the same page as Becky, like no news is good news. I've reached out a couple of times and made to ask if I needed to improve anything that I'd done as far as the paperwork goes to Kelly, and I haven't heard back. So, if you have any other questions, I can try to answer them.
Council.
About the event itself. Yes, sir.
So is this the first time they're utilizing the city park for this?
It should be the first and last. The only reason that they're not using the track this year is their turf project. They've re-turfed their football field, and they're now in a holding pattern waiting for the turf to take place, and they've closed Husky Plaza or Husky Stadium for the duration of the summer. So next year they should be welcome back at the...
I'm 100% in supporting it because it's a good cause. So, I'm not opposed to it at all. I don't. We've never gone through this before, and I was just wondering if this was, you know, something off, one event off.
I usually try to look for a contract or an event that's existed in the past, especially as new things come up, so that I don't have to recreate the wheel, and I couldn't find anything. So it is something that's completely new, but I feel confident that we've covered all the bases that we need on at least the planning stages, and then the implementation of the actual event as it gets closer. We'll be sure to stay in close contact with the Relay for Life committee.
So did the school normally take money from them for the use of the facilities under their...
I don't know the answer to that. I didn't ask.
Because I was going to mention something that we're going to charge them a $200 special event fee. Can we make a donation to the Cancer Society from as a city?
No, but we as staff and employees and...
We can individually.
We can pool our and basically donate it right back.
Like we could be a team if you wanted to have a city team, organize that. But we're a little late in the game on that, aren't we?
I was just thinking if we pass the hat and collect $200 and then just donate it back to them.
We can do that.
Yeah, I don't think you have to have an actual team to make a donation. Yeah, it's probably a little short-lived to try to scrape something together in a team route, but I'm sure they would appreciate it. I don't know if they pay the school or not. I know the school does an awful lot for them every year, but I'm not sure how that's reciprocated, and I also don't know if they have to comply with the same gifting policies that the city does. So I can find that information out if you'd like me to look into it.
What's the difference of waiving the fee for this but then for the Seahawks?
We wouldn't be waiving the fee. We're saying that they pay the fee and then we as individuals...
Yeah, he's asking a legitimate question. Why couldn't we just waive the fee?
Why couldn't we waive the $200 fee?
Did we waive the fee for the Seahawks?
We waived it for the Seahawks.
I don't think I was here for that.
So could we make the... Can we... What?
No, that's a good question.
It is. Good. I didn't realize that. And so I would like to make the motion that we approve the resolution to use Lions Park via the American Cancer Society, provided that we don't charge a fee for it.
Can we? Wait a minute.
It's council's legislative authority. It can do anything it wants, within reason. But the only thing is I would caution you about doing that without setting some kind of a policy. Because
you already did if you waived the fee for the Seahawks.
That's a precedent, but is it a policy that, because they're a nonprofit group.
So is the Chamber, so is All Cities Classic Car Show, so are a lot of other organizations that use our facilities that we charge annually.
I would say you'd be probably better off just passing the hat if you want to offset the fee for this one and by individuals.
But you guys have the authority to do what you want to do.
Just
the cost-cushy thing is
everybody's going to want it. Everybody's got a good cause. We start waving.
Fourth of July is a good cause, you know. Car show is a good cause, isn't it?
You're going down a slippery slope.
Yeah, that's.
Do you have any recommendation, Amy?
I would recommend charging them the $200 for the facility use, although it is a good cause. They've already planned it into their budget, and there are many events across the nation that pay for the venue that they have, depending on the size that they are. And it will make for a very difficult conversation in the next year every time somebody that is a local organization comes to me and asks me for a facility use agreement and doesn't want to pay because it's a good cause. So not to be selfish, but that'll be difficult to say why it was justifiable in one case and not the other.
Yeah.
and there will be extra work that has to go into the park, probably not as much as some, but, you know, making sure that the preparations are made for them and that all of the facilities are ready, moving picnic benches and pulling out the vendor cord and using electricity and water and ball field lights and hockey lights and basketball lights.
Okay, got it. Got it.
What do you want to do, council? Approve it?
I'll make the motion to approve the resolution authorizing the use of Lyons Park by the American Cancer Society.
Second.
Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you, Amy. Any unfinished business? Item 5. I have one. The AC is out. And what have we... somebody was asking on the council what we're doing with regard to that.
I'll let Terry address that. He's got all the details.
The AC is out.
Yeah.
And
it is.
It's kind of. It's cool in my place, so, but it's out here. Unfortunately, one of the compressors, recip compressors out here, sucked the valve, punched a hole in a piston, and that unit is $16,094 to R&R that out with labor, tools, evacuation, fill, compressor oil, put back online. We have temporaries out here to keep this cool enough in here so that you can sit comfortably up there and make decisions. But they're supposed to ship this in out of Spokane. I let them know today after talking to Wade. To put this back online, it's going to take a good day to put this online. So whenever they get it in from Spokane, they got it today. So it should be sometime tomorrow that they start back with it. They got to pull the old unit out, put a new unit in. There's two compressors out there, two 20-ton units under that AC unit.
Who is?
Paul Hamus.
Okay.
So does this bring it up to where it's going to be able to cool things the way it's supposed to and heat things the way it's supposed to?
I would think that it would run a little more efficient knowing that all three valves in the unit work. So it will overcool. It just doesn't heat as well. Cool is fine, but heat, no good. Needs some work on the heat side. So.
Okay. We'll again address that at the budget time. So are these units something that could be used later on, like next year, from approving the budget to redo the whole system?
I think your AC unit's fine. I think your state-of-the-art boiler is a three-step boiler. Since we burnt the bottom out of the old one, this one here is state-of-the-art solid state here. The problem that we have in here is the heating part of it in the winter. Ladies like to use the foot heaters underneath their desk, which throws the stat off on the wall, which tells the valve in the ceiling not to put any heat in your office. The coils above the rooms that run the vents, basically, they're not big enough for the hot water that runs in there.
So you got one end of the hallway that's freezing cold, and the other end is nice and toasty.
But it's been like that since they opened it. Because I was here the first year they were in it. And they weren't able to heat it like it's supposed to be, because it basically was designed for the other side of the mountains.
All I know is when I bought all those little space heaters for my girls at the office, I've never froze so much in my life. And this year I'm going to take every single one of them out of the office, and we're just going to let the main system keep us warm. And if you're not warm enough, wear a coat or bring a sweater.
Socks.
Yeah. Thermals, yeah. Okay, Terry, thank you.
You're welcome.
New business. I'll go to 6.1. Next Monday is a regularly scheduled workshop meeting. Don't believe we have an agenda. Are you guys in favor of canceling that meeting? Okay, I need a motion. Angel made the motion. Gina seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Our next meeting will be on the 10th, our regular city council meeting. Is there any other new business you guys want to bring up today? Hearing none, we'll move to item 7. Council will also receive the following 7.1 department head reports. And having no further business to come before the city council, I'll adjourn tonight's meeting at 7:15 p.m.